Reading about cemeteries today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. You could say that Menda Powers Douglas is really into cemeteries. We'll ask how far on Scribble.
Nice to have you with us today, Menda. I have followed your career ever since you somehow got off the track from being a normal Augustana English major to getting interested in cemeteries. And you've never lost that interest because I see your name in the paper for a new book or a new program, you know, every couple of years or so. What's with cemeteries?
I love them, and not very many people seem to say that. I've been interested in cemeteries for most of my life. I blame my mother because we've lived over by Riverside Cemetery in Moline for many years, and she would take me there and to some other cemeteries just that looked interesting while we were out and about. And when we were there, she didn't focus on, oh, these people are dead and death, death, death. She focused on, oh, look at this stone over here. Look at this mausoleum. I wonder what this person was like. And that apparently stuck with me because I wrote my first book and published it in 2005, and it was called Cemetery Walk. Ever since then, I've been in a cemetery.
And was that about a particular cemetery?
It ended up being about a number of cemeteries and a number of people. It's a bit of a memoir as well, because it's me coming to terms a little bit with the death of my grandfather, intermixed amongst stories of people who either work for cemeteries, are artists who are inspired by cemeteries, are people who are taphophiles who love cemeteries like I do, and have been interested in them for years. So it's a bit of a mix, and I think it's a lot of fun. A lot of good memories are built into this book.
Well, you seem to get an audience wherever you go, and tell us about getting the book published. How did you do that?
Well, I decided that it's a cemetery book. I'm going to self-publish it because, you know, how many cemetery books are out there? And if you were to look at my bookshelf, you'd say, oh, there's quite a few, but I've really had to look for them over the years. So it's really a niche area, especially back in 2005.
Right.
And at the time when I was writing it, people would get excited if they heard I was writing a book, and they'd say, oh, what are you writing about? That's so exciting. Cemeteries. And they just give me a look and go, oh, and back away and out of the room. Like, oh, man. And then the more I got into the writing of the book and the more I got into the research and started a Facebook group welcoming people to share their stories and photos, more and more people would come to me, and more would say, I thought I was the only one. My husband thinks I'm a weirdo. My family thinks I'm a weirdo. So I know a lot of weirdos, and they're really not all that weird. They're fabulous people.
Oh, cemeteries are endlessly fascinating places to visit.
Yes.
Especially if you go back in time and go to cemeteries where there are real monuments around.
Oh. Yes.
It's amazing how much is spent on death. That's the most surprising thing for me. What is the most elaborate cemetery you've been to in terms of extravagant monuments and so on?
I guess I'm going to have to say Mount Auburn over in Cambridge in Massachusetts, because It's huge, and it was the first. I refer to them as Victorian cemeteries because it was right in the middle of the Victorian era, and it was very. They were inspired by the Victorians, who were all about death because Queen Victoria was all about death. So it was 1938. Mount Auburn was founded, and it was founded as a place that wasn't just for the dead, but it was for the living to come as well. It was founded as a tourist area. I mean, not like Disney World, but close enough as far as a cemetery goes. But it was what the change was instead of just putting people in the ground in a space that was far enough away from people, now it was finding a special place with beautiful natural landscaping, trees, streams, ponds, and then working within nature to build the cemetery within it. So there were landscape artists that came in and did the work there. So when these beautiful statues came in, all these monuments, it all fit into the natural beauty as well. So I would say that because that one's our first one, that it probably has the most and just the most and the oldest. It just, there's something about that place that is, it's mm-hmm. very special.
Yeah. You know, with the increasing use of cremation, mm-hmm. how has that changed cemeteries?
That's a really good question, because there are a lot of people who will say, cemeteries are a waste of space, you know, just dead people live there. Or, you know, not live mm-hmm. there. I live there, the dead people do not. But they're still, you know, they're still very important. And some people a good number of people for many years had thought that once you have somebody cremated that you just leave them in the urn and put them on the mantle, or, well, sometimes just shove them in a closet somewhere.
Or they don't scatter them.
Or you scatter them. And they otherwise, they really don't know what to do with cremains. So I think it's important for people to know that you can take them to cemeteries. You can have them put into the special mausoleums. There's like walls of mm-hmm. looks like windows. If you go into the Oakdale Memorial Gardens Public Mausoleum, there are a couple spaces where it's almost floor to ceiling, or it is floor to ceiling with. These little niches where you can mm-hmm. put your loved one, and you can also put in decorations and personalize them the way you want to. They can also be buried as well, but I think it's now a little more known that people can, you know, you can do something more with mm-hmm. with the ashes of cremains.
Yeah, it's I know George Burns used to go visit his wife's grave site, mm-hmm. and I think she had been cremated. I'm not sure because I have a picture of him against some kind of wall. Uh-huh. He would go and talk to her regularly.
Yeah.
He'd just go and catch her up on the latest news and so on. I thought that was very touching.
Yes.
He was an interesting guy. But can you read something from your book for us?
Sure.
Give us an idea of what is contained in a cemetery book.
Okay. Well, I've decided to share a passage about Riverside Cemetery, Moline, and talk about the Black Angel, one of our wonderful legends in the area who has grown to, pardon the pun, monumental proportions.
I see.
But bear with me. Angels and Legends. The most famous lady associated with Riverside Cemetery in Moline, Illinois, is not even buried there. In fact, she hasn't been in Riverside for decades. She has no name, but she is legendary. Known only as the Black Angel, since she once marked the family plot of Charles Deere, son of plow and tractor maven John Deere. The Deere plot can be found on top of the hill in the cemetery in one of the most prime locations. A tall circle of hedges used to surround it. This was written a little while back. In September 1906, a huge, rough-hewn white granite cross was erected on the Deer family plot. The cross stands nearly 15 feet tall and weighs approximately 5 tons. Months later, in 1907, a bronze statue of an angel was placed in front of the cross, sharing space on the 9-ton granite base with the cross and a matching rough-hewn block with the Deer name carved into it. According to an article in the Moline Dispatch newspaper, September 20th, 1906, the statue was originally erected with the cross, but the finish was not satisfactory, and it was accordingly sent back to New York for change. So even before the Black Angel found her home at Riverside, she had issues. One more note about the large crucifix, which still stands at the Deer Memorial site. To give you a better idea of just how massive the cross is, that same newspaper article notes that 8 horses could not draw the crucifix to its position, and it was found necessary to drag the stone to the top of the hill with a block and tackle. I'm always fascinated how people get these monuments right where they're supposed to be. When I was a kid when I first started hearing stories about the Black Angel. At first, I'd heard just bits and pieces. She was somewhere in Riverside. She was huge. She was solid black, and she could kill a person. When I asked my mom about the Black Angel, she told me that supposedly if you went into the cemetery at night and touched her, you'd die. Thinking back, I can't remember if you were supposed to die instantly or if you died in a week. Perhaps I'm getting my urban legends confused, because that sounds more like what happened in the movie The Ring. Years later, as a teenager, I heard another story about the Black Angel. Many years before, some teenage girls were telling stories about the Black Angel and how she was the angel of death. One girl laughed at the others and told them they were gullible for believing in ghost stories. So her friends dared her to spend the night in the cemetery next to the Black Angel in order to make sure she would stay put. After the friends left for the night, they decided to chain her to the statue, which is a great group of friends. Rolling her eyes, the girl accepted. She was laughing when they left the cemetery, telling them that they owed her a big breakfast the next day. When her friends returned in the morning, the girl was no longer laughing. While she was quite alive, she was catatonic, and her brunette hair had turned stark white. Above her, the Black Angel stared blankly down at another in a long line of victims. This is one of the many stories that has circulated for years about the Black Angel. And ask just about anyone about baby boomer age or older in the Quad Cities, particularly those who live on the Illinois side of the river, if they know about this particular statue, and they'll most likely have their own tale to tell about her.
Is that still there?
No, she was bothered by so many people for so long, the family moved her, and she was either at the Deer Wyman House or the Butterworth Center for a while, and people were like, oh, she's over there, let's go bother her over there. Because, you know, you gotta test if something's gonna kill you or not, and you know how it goes with urban legends. Everybody who dies with an urban legend, their story still gets out somehow. Yeah. So they must stay alive a little longer.
Almost every cemetery seems to have an urban angel. Kind of story.
Something. Yeah, there's one in Iowa City. The Black Angel, she ended up, I believe she's in California now, at a retreat center. So she really needed a break after all of that. But yeah, there's stories of spinning gravestones and all sorts of evil, weird things and ghosts wandering around. So I love all the stories, and I don't care whether, you know, you believe them or not. I'm like, do I really believe a tombstone is spinning somewhere? No. But I love the story and the idea that story has been passed on for
years.
Where
do you do your research, Minda?
Well, thank goodness here for the Rock Island County Historical Society, and thank goodness for the internet. And no, I don't just go on Wikipedia just hearing the strange things, but I find a lot of information by checking into other historical societies and libraries across everywhere. Really.
Well, you know, you have written the cemetery walk. Where do you go from here? I mean, is there more to write about cemeteries? Or can you out into mausoleums or something?
Oh, there are so many ways to branch out, and there's never going to be enough to write about in, or never going to be enough books to write about cemeteries. I wrote another book for Arcadia called Images of America, Chip Ionic Cemetery, from our beautiful cemetery in Rock Island. And every time I have gone there, I have seen something that I've never noticed before. And it sometimes it's something absolutely magnificent. Sometimes it's a small thing, but sometimes the small things are just as important as the big things.
Didn't you write a cemetery out in Hollywood or L.A.?
I have been working on a book off and on about silent film actresses and their grave sites. Let me back up a little bit. I write about cemeteries for a number of reasons. I love the symbolism. I love the stones. I love what they are. But I also want to capture the stories of people who have been forgotten. If there's somebody that I can find a little information on and tell their story, I really want to do it. Because every person's name that you see, sometimes that you don't see, every person that is buried in a cemetery had a story, and they had people who loved them and cared about them. Even those ones that are in paupers' locations, somebody loved them at some time, and they had special stories. And that's what I respect and want to hold up in mm-hmm. it for the future for them. And I have found that silent film stars are a bit in the same boat because they played such a huge part in Hollywood. And I love old Hollywood. I love the history of it. And, you know, people that just jumped in and they did everything they could just to make this art happen, even if it meant people looking down on them. Because back in that time, if you were in the Flickers, you were lowbrow. You needed to be in the theater. So when I started looking into these silent film stars, you know, Mary Pickford and Claire Bow and some of the other big ones, I also found that the lesser known ones, the ones that blew up at one time and then faded out into nothing, there are so many of those. And so many of these ladies, I started with the ladies, and there's so many of them and men as well, but a lot of them either have unmarked graves. We don't know where they are. And that makes me really sad because they were such an important part of the history of film. And film's a big deal for us. It's a huge thing for
you
us.
You know, but it's easy to be forgotten.
Yes.
It's unless you've done something awful or have been, invented something important, mm-hmm. you are going to be forgotten. You really are. And it's important to remember that. I know there are people who want to do things to keep their name alive. Mm-hmm. And to live in a name, I suppose, it means a lot to people. But I'm not so sure it's worth the effort. But are you still writing? Are there outlets for your writing now, or are you just preparing another book?
I'm writing all the time, not always what in the creative way what I want to write. I'm a freelance writer, and I've been finding work for myself that is in my cemetery, funerary interest. So when I'm looking for work, I'll type in like, okay, funeral, let's see what Upwork has on funeral things right now, and I've gotten some jobs where I'm discussing different funeral topics, like to help people with how do you plan a funeral, what do you wear to a funeral, and these are the things that I enjoy writing about. People may think that's strange, but a lot of people don't want to think about these topics, and if they can find my article online and say, okay, this helps me. because I didn't know what to do or how to begin, because it's such a hard time. And if you're, you know, you lose somebody, what do you do? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, you know, it's true that death is something we don't talk about. I just happened to have a discussion with my cardiologist recently, and I don't know how the subject came up, but we were just talking, and he said, you write a column, why don't you write about death? I thought, well, I did a TV program on it once. But that was long ago.
So yeah. Attitudes towards cemeteries seem to me to have changed over the years. You mentioned cemeteries as lawns and gardens and so forth, and people used to go there for picnics.
Oh, they did.
They still do in other countries. And we were I was staying with a family in Peru, and one Sunday they said, well, today we're going to go out and visit grandmother. And I said, oh, okay. Well, you know, and they went, and all of a sudden we were in a cemetery, and there was grandmother. And
there she was,
We had a conversation, a little picnic.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't seem to be the case much anymore, even though cemeteries are as beautiful as they were.
Oh, yeah.
But why?
Well, we had, I think it was around World War II when, I mean, death was very prominent across, the world. And we pulled away from the cemeteries around that time because people didn't want to have any more reminders than they already did. So from then on, it was, you know, people were associated them solely with grieving and pain. But it still doesn't change the fact that our loved ones are there. And if we want a place where we can feel we connect to them, for a lot of people, it's the cemetery. Others, you know, it could be something different, but a cemetery is a place where you can go.
Mm-hmm. How does a cemetery develop a kind of feeling? It seems to me if you go through all the cemeteries in Rock Island, they really are different from each other.
Oh, they really are, yeah.
How did that happen? I mean, a cemetery should be a cemetery.
Yeah, you didn't think so. Well, Chip Ionic was established in 1956, and that was in the big heyday of the Victorian era garden rural cemeteries with the more ornate.
You mean 1856?
Oh, 1856. I say 1956.
Yeah, you said that a couple times.
Means 18. 18. Oh, my gosh.
That's all right.
Don't listen to the cemetery person. She has no idea what she's talking about.
Well, now that we're in the 20s, the 19 seems way back.
Yes, back
and that's
back
where
in the
I
day.
Am.
Yes, 1856. Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness.
That does go way back.
It does. And, back then people would go there and they would socialize. And it was a place for the living and for the dead. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, there probably wasn't too much of a difference as far as how people spent their time because, you know, death was very prevalent. You know, if you had a child that lived past a certain age, you know, that was something to be very excited about.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you think you could drive down a blue highway someplace in Illinois and come to a small town and see the cemetery and conclude something about that town?
Ooh. I think so. Yeah, I think
good
so. That's
or
a
bad?
Great question. I mean, there are things about cemeteries that that can be unique within them.
Individual towns have personalities.
Yeah, they do. If there's a cemetery that, you know, they only have a cemetery by the church, you know, you can probably imagine that the religion of that area was, you know, was pretty much across the board for people. Or if it was if you find a cemetery in the middle of a farmland and just, you know, they would have been away from everything probably for quite a while to have their families there. And those I find interesting because anybody could own that land now. It's hard to say where those families are, if they ended up, you know, sticking around or eventually moved away. Who's taking care of those cemeteries? But they're, I do stop along those blue highways. My husband got used to it early on. But, you know, we found one with a mass grave for yellow fever in it along the Great River Road. There can be little things or big things that you can find out about them. There's another cemetery that is, I don't know, half an hour or so out away from Peoria, and there is a soldier there, a Civil War soldier there, whose birth name is on the stone as well as his gender name after a certain time period. Jenny became Albert. First, she wanted to fight. She wanted to fight for her country, and then ended up living her life as a man the rest of her life. And, you know, just looking at that cemetery, you're just going to see a cemetery. But if you look a little closer, you'll see some very interesting things. And that, I think, is a...
I pulled off a highway once coming back from St. Louis, heading to Springfield, to see Mother Jones.
Right. Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, that was, you know, the metal thing over the archway, over the grave. But I thought, yeah, I want to see that, this remarkable woman.
Yeah.
And you, oddly enough, I read Mother Jones magazine one time, and I thought, well, that's a funny name. And then I looked into it and discovered this remarkable woman, read all about her life. And then one day I thought, well, what the heck, you know? Yep. It's just off the road here. Let's go. But don't some cemeteries get organized, you know, that the stones are to be a certain size and they're be somewhat uniform?
Yeah.
You find that?
Yes, that's a trend that's been going on for quite a while. And I don't like it. I can tell you that right off the bat.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, I have my picket sign, you know, no more flat lawn stones. You know, everybody who's lived a life, I think that they deserve to have something that stands up and says, hey, I was here. My grandpa, who I write about in the book, he was the first of my closest relatives to pass away. And my family is all in this area. This is my mom's family, her siblings and parents, of course. And he's in Moline Memorial, which is a lovely place. But he and my grandma decided they would be buried in the flat lawn stone area. No upright things allowed. And I'm not happy about it. One of these days, and I know Todd, that is he oversees it both there and Riverside. He has to keep an eye out for me sometimes about digging up my grandpa and moving him to a place. So.
Well, we are moving out of time here, but thank you very much,
Minda
Powers Douglas, for telling us about cemeteries on Scribble.